It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Good to see Captain Mike.
I'll be here.
That's right.
Here. And we semi here.
Yeah, that's right. The recorded in advance because, of course, today's second day of snapper season 2020. So we're on assignment.
I think me and you might be catching a snapper today.
That's our assignment. So, yep. But this is coming to you from the past.
Yep.
But lots to talk about on today's show. And I want to start off, though, with a interview. This is something the rumor mill, Lord knows the text line here at the station, knowing how much we think about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo and what we think of the JCs, people text me like an information point on the rodeo. And I go, wait a second. I have in no official capacity, but I know someone who is. Right. So let's start off the show. We got lots coming up on the show, but I want to tackle this right here off the bat and lead off batter. The president of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, Corey Quint, joining us right now. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. And man, let me just say, man, it's going to be a good weekend for catching snapper. You know, I'll be out there Saturday. Hopefully I catch one bigger than you.
Keep dreaming.
Are you in the tournament, Corey?
Captain Blood are going. You see what we do out of the bay boat.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You got to take it. I mean, with y'all in that, are y'all going to Mexico in it this time? Where are you going in there?
Nah, man, we ain't doing that this time.
And we'll talk about this weekend snapper fishing because this is going to kind of continue our conversation into talk about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. So let's right here off the bat talk to folks about the rodeo, because I'm sure you're hearing this constantly. Are you know, with coronavirus, with all this stuff, are y'all having the rodeo this year?
Man, we are having a rodeo. You know, first and foremost, at our core, we are a fishing tournament. And with everything going on, you know, we had a lot of tough decisions to make. You know, we actually made a decision last Monday, the board of directors. And, you know, we talked with the town, you know, all the guidelines. You know, we can't just fly, you know, we just can't make a fly-by-minute decision. You know, as I've told you numerous times, we start planning this thing, you know, a week after the rodeo ends, you know, so we made the decision. We are having a fishing tournament. We are selling T-shirts. What that's going to look like, you know, we're not going to have our sponsor tent, unfortunately. We're not going to be selling alcohol on site. We are not going to be having the Liars contest. We're not going to be having music. And all that is due to, we don't want to give anybody a reason to congregate. So, you know, we're kind of going back old school with just fishing and just, you know, selling T-shirts. And, you know, our site is still open, you know, so if people want to come down, see their family members weigh in, they want to just look at the fish being weighed in, they want to see the boats, they want to come down there and look at the wonderful sunset, you know, all that's going to be open. We're just trying not to give anybody a reason to congregate in groups. And that decision was not taken lightly. It was probably the toughest decision that any of us in that room have had to make during our rodeo careers. You know, and you got guys in there that have been in there 14 years. You know, you got it was just a tough decision, but I think it's the best decision, you know, because like I said, at our core, first and foremost, we are a fishing tournament, and we are still having a fishing tournament.
Okay, that's
good news.
Yeah, that's the good news, and yep. That's what a lot of people have asked. You know, are we fishing? Are we fishing? And so we are fishing. And what about for Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament? Are we fishing the weekend before?
Yeah, Roy Martin's going to be business as usual. That's July 11th. You know, you can buy your tickets in advance, and also you can buy them the day of. You know, you can go and fish, come step on the dock to weigh your fish, and buy your ticket.
Okay,
so that one's all about the kids.
So we're fishing both, but the differences are, Corey, you're saying the differences are things like because yes, y'all are probably, you know, to start off with a fishing tournament, but y'all have over the years built a whole nother world around that fishing tournament for entertainment.
Right. You know, we like to call it the show.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I spoke with you a lot last year about how it's a family event. You know, that's something that we've really been working towards, and that's what really hurt us that we couldn't do that. You know, it's, you know, we all have this grand idea of what we're going to do you know, throughout the year, how we're going to leave our mark on the year, stuff like that. And it just, you know, it can't be done, unfortunately. And, you know, we had to make these tough decisions so we could move forward, you know, because this is a big production, you know, so.
Yeah, a huge production. I'm thinking about it in your, you know, your capacity as president, but, you know, going, wow, what is it like to deal with this? Because I think back, okay, oil spill years, things like that. But those were the water people. You could make the argument the water wasn't ready. You know, you couldn't be fishing. Couldn't do,
right.
Yeah, but right now, the fishing and the water, everything's fine there. It's the people. It's a weird situation. You know, I mean, to expect
right. It's something that we've never had to deal with. You know, back in the oil spill, Eric Hartigan was the president that year, and you know the difference is the government, you know, said you're not fishing, and
right.
you know this is us having to make a responsible, safe decision for our anglers, for our members, for the spectators. You know, it was just different. You know, this is something that nobody's ever had to deal with. It's a very fluid situation, you know. So we just, like I said, we had to make decisions and roll with it. And, you know, it is kind of what it is at this point.
So walk me through a weigh-in process, okay, for this year. Will there be any change? I come in there, tie up, get the fish. Do I do that the same way?
You'll still be able to, you know, we've talked about, usually we have a dock master mm-hmm. up top, you know, that's stocking boats as they get into the Allo Bay Channel. You know, if we're still doing the social distancing thing at that point, you know, we are going to have 6-foot marks, you know, marked off on the dock and coming from the roadside. You know, I'm sure that we'll have something posted on one of the buoys coming in, like make sure you're on this channel, mm-hmm. you know, because in addition to docking boats in order, you know, we're going to probably have to unload people in order, you know, like basically say, hey, you know, blue Triton on the outside of dock 6, you can now get off your boat and get in line. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a little different. You know, it's not just going to be a free for all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's just ideas and stuff that we have discussed. You know, but we might not have to do that at that time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as you said, in all parts of our lives, it's fluid right now. You know, what was the thing last, you know, week may be different next week, and we, you know, always learn new things. But this is with the information you'll have on hand now, how you're moving forward. So we are fishing. We are weighing the fish in. What about things like, you know, I got to ask you, I mean, we're still doing the drawing for the boat giveaway. Any of those things changed?
Yeah, I kept telling you last year we're giving away the biggest boat that we had ever given. We had gone up again, you know, so this year is actually going to be the largest boat that we've ever given away. You know, all you got to do is weigh in a legal fish in our tournament, and you will be entered into a drawing for a 25-foot Contender Bay powered by a 250 Yamaha Show sitting on a Sport Trail trailer. And
Don't get no better than that.
It's a bad rig, man.
It is. Those are gorgeous boats. Okay, so
Can I get a ticket for every fish I enter?
No, just one per person.
I'm just talking about just me.
Just the Mike Ward exception. Corey, and if you're just joining us, talking to Corey Quint and president of the rodeo, and we're talking about some of the changes. So those changes really are in the things that go on around rodeo headquarters. Our fishing, our categories, those kind of things, we're still business as usual.
Categories might change a little bit. You know, I'd recommend, you know, checking out ADSFR.com once the rules get posted, which they should be posted fairly soon. You know, they'll be in the books that you get with your ticket. You know, but one thing I did want to mention is, you know, speckled trout. We had some changes to speckled trout. You know, we're a large tournament. We like to take in, you know, into account consideration for conservation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're doing this year is we have first through third, like what you would call open competition, and then jackpots, right, for speckled mm-hmm. trout. That is going to be a single slot fish.
It's going to be slot.
It's going to be tight. You know, your 16 to 22-inch fish, pinch tail. And then whenever we go into our cash prize divisions, you're going to have two different divisions. You're going to have a creel, which is going to be a 5-fish creel for your boat, and one of those fish can be over 22 inches, but we're doing a minimum of 25 inches.
Okay.
So you can have 4 slot fish and 1 fish over 25, or you can have 5 slot fish.
Okay. So
and then you're going to have a separate cache division that is a lunker trout that is going to be 25 inches or over.
And for example, let's say I had tickets for all and I caught that 27 inch trout. Could it be part of my creel and then entered in the lunker, or is it?
That's correct. But you would have to have bought tickets for both.
For both.
You'd have to have bought entries into both of those. It can count towards both.
So the idea there is a place in the rodeo to weigh a giant trout. There is a place,
yes.
but that's the correct. Bulk of, the
to,
bulk of the harvest
to get in those divisions.
Okay, but the bulk of the harvest, like the open and all that, is going to be inside the slot.
That's correct. 16 to 22.
It's a little different.
It's now I'm picturing right now. I'm sorry, I'm running in my brain. Where have I caught the fattest trout?
Yeah.
or the chunks out there. Okay, so the ways somebody could get in. There's open, just first through third speckled trout. There's also, you said, jackpot for the creel and jackpot for the lunker.
Well, there's a jackpot, which is just slot, and then there is cash prize division, which we have those two divisions that I just mentioned.
Okay.
So what about live fish division? I know in the past.
We're still working on that.
Okay.
We're still working on that. Those will all be announced. We're trying to figure out what structure we want to do with that route.
Okay.
Let's, yeah.
And I know Snapper is going to be on the menu.
Right.
But,
you'll have a red snapper jackpot. We'll also have a big game jackpot. We'll have a king mackerel jackpot. So all that kind of stuff stays the same.
But it could change on the snapper, right? I mean, there is a chance that the quota could get caught and they may not have it. It may not extend that long.
I want to thank Scott Bannon and Chris Blankenship.
Absolutely.
They look out for us.
Yep.
I don't see that happening. You know, they, if you notice, for the last 2 years, the season ends the Sunday of our tournament. So
right.
They try to look out for us, and I don't see that happening.
That'd be
awesome. We have conversations with them, because we sell sponsorships and stuff like that in regards to that. So they look out for us.
Well, hopefully that they won't get the quota. As many people as fishing now, I'm telling you.
I know, with you and Corey fishing this weekend, we may be at the quota by Sunday. So, so those are, I mean, there's some onshore changes and then some in the water changes on the trout. Anything else you want to point out that's really a big difference than on the fishing side from years past?
Not as of right now.
Okay.
I can't answer rules questions.
Sure.
We do have, we have rules chairman for that, and that's Kevin Marin or Captain Richard Rutland. Those are the guys that can officially answer any kind of rules questions, and the rules will be published at least by Father's Day weekend.
Okay.
And that's whenever tickets go on sale.
Hey, what about, the check-ins, where you have check-ins, any changes on that for big game and all that?
Usually, we did not do any kind of sign-outs last year. I would imagine that it's going to be the same this year, where it's all done through the Fish and Chaos app. Just make sure you're registered. They send out any kind of designators for catch and release and stuff like that. So,
this situation stinks out there. Technology is make it. If it was 25, 30 years ago, we're trying to do this, it might be a lot harder without. I mean, y'all have embraced technology with the JCs and the rodeo. I mean, you've been doing that already, for a decade. And now it's, in a weird way, it kind of pays off now, Corey.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know where we would be if we weren't, doing what we have worked for over the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So tickets go on sale when?
Father's Day weekend.
So, and we can buy them, of course, online. And will they be available in retail locations?
We're still working out retail locations, but all that stuff will be announced. You can follow us on Facebook. Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio, or check our website, and it'll have all that information there.
And you, yeah, I just real quickly.
I know when you order a ticket online, you don't get a book, and you're supposed to have the rules on your boat before you know, when you come in the way, you're supposed to have rules there. So what do we do about getting a book if you order online?
They'll be available at the rodeo site before the tournament that Thursday when the Liars Contest normally is. I want to say that that's the 16th of July.
Yeah.
In addition to that, this year, whenever you buy your ticket online, you will have a link to the online book. So,
yeah.
You'll have all the,
I'll help all Mike the through that
available on your smartphone or however.
Okay,
you, I'll help Mike.
Then that's all we need.
I'll print them out for Mike and staple them so he can have a paper copy.
Well, shouldn't have to. We can just keep it on our phone.
I know,
right?
That's easy. But I saw that look. Are you okay with that?
I'm
on your
good.
Phone? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. And you mentioned it just at the beginning of our conversation, but this is one of the biggest questions too. I know you're getting asked. So the T-shirts, right? You're doing T-shirts. How are they going to be available?
Just like normal. You know, you can come buy your T-shirts. We're going to have multiple locations on site to buy your T-shirts, you know, so we can properly distance. And, you know, I can't really announce it yet, but we have something else up our sleeve that'll be announced closer to the tournament. That will be a first time for us. So
he said something about T-shirts, and then he said something up his sleeve. You see,
yeah.
What he did? That's why he's the president of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio.
Yeah.
Corey, thank you for your time. We'll be talking to you and your other staff members a bunch between now and Father's Day weekend, and, of course, moving forward towards Roy Martin and the Big Rodeo.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me, Sean.
Thank you, Corey.
Hey, we always appreciate you, too. All right, so there, hopefully, we answered a lot of the questions I've been hearing about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio.
The main thing is, the rodeo is on.
Welcome back.
You're darn
FM right. Talk Show, 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Corey Quint.
That's the main thing we need
President.
To know.
I like the sound of that. Coming right back. This year's Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Tough deal, too. You got a feel for them. You know, you're in an organization like the JC's, probably working up thinking maybe, you know, one day I'm going to be the president of this. And there you are. You're the president. And then something like this happens.
He's going to be known as the COVID president.
That's right.
The Wuhan president.
The Wuhan rodeo. The thing that stinks about it is it affects the we as a group, I will say this, that like to hunt and fish, we have had less effect than a lot of other people have other hobbies. Right? We've talked about just the nature of what we all like to do.
Yeah, we want to be away from people.
We're separate, you know. We're already social distancing. I mean, I talked about during turkey season, didn't, you know, I kind of somewhat, in a weird way, felt guilty when I knew friends of mine that had things they liked to do were shut down, you know, whether it's indoor activities or golf courses.
Yeah.
Those things that were shut down for a while, they had those issues. I'm like, man, my hobbies haven't changed much during this. But that is because, you know, it's pretty, hunting. It's not like we're in a tournament. But now we get into this. You know, you've got the Snapper tournament going on this weekend.
Yep.
Okay. You've got, you've in the month of June, we know because we promote these things. I think there are usually one, because there's multiples on weekends. There's probably 6 or 7 tournaments that take place between now and the beginning of July.
Oh, absolutely. Here's something else, too, Sean. We're having tournaments over here. We had the Orange Beach Classic billfish tournament last weekend. We got the Mobile Big Game Fish Club billfish tournament going on this weekend. We got the Snapper Rodeo going on this weekend. Now, I called Louisiana because I was getting a room over in Louisiana to fish the billfish tournament, and I decided not to because it looked like it was going to be rough where I was going to fish at. Anyway, and I was talking to the lady over there, and she said, "What, y'all having a tournament?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "We're having a tournament." I said, "Everybody's canceled all the tournaments over here in Louisiana. There's no tournaments over here in Louisiana this year." Now,
think about how that affects, because most tournaments are based around a charity of some sort, right? I mean, there's series and other ones that aren't, but like the regular, we're having the so-and-so tournament. They're always based around a charity. And
a lot of them are,
You know, I mean, I would say more than 50%, of fishing tournaments based around some sort of charity. Those folks aren't getting those, you know, whatever the charitable endeavor is, not getting the money.
That's right. Yeah, but I was shocked. Louisiana, I mean, that's the sportsman's paradise.
Yeah, but they've also been in the Southeast. They've been hit harder than anybody else, you know, in that state. But if you can open, let me go back to make the argument though on your side of this. If you can open up the retail store,
sure.
Can't you have a tournament?
I agree.
But they'll probably argue that it's not critical infrastructure. I don't know. But so Louisiana's – I wonder if they canceled them way back when they didn't know what was happening versus, you know.
I'm not sure. All I can tell you is that the lady told me that we were lucky because they weren't having any tournaments and all the tournaments were canceled. That's what she told me. And this was over in Fouchon, Louisiana. And they have all kind of tournaments over there. Now, whether they're going to have some later on, you know, in late June or July or whatever, now, there may be. Mm-hmm. But right now, there is no tournaments over there.
Wow.
So I know next week we're fishing the Kingmaster tournament out of Biloxi.
Yeah, so what's the story on that?
Well, it's all a go, yeah. Mm-hmm. There'll be probably 100 boats or so probably fishing the Kingmaster out of Biloxi.
You know, one of the parts of traveling, though, like you're talking about booking a room in Fouchon, I talked about this during the week on the Midday Show, was how do people feel going to hotels? And I was thinking about more just summer vacation.
Sure.
Just family
mm-hmm.
summer
yeah,
vacations.
Right.
I think there's going to be, obviously, the airlines, we have that whole, problem. People aren't going to feel, people are flying, the airlines are coming back, you can fly, but there's, 50% capacity or 60% capacity on the planes, so they can keep people separate, even though you're all in the same tube with the same air.
That's right.
But
plus, they're not getting 50 or 60% right now anyway,
right,
probably.
Right, but people probably, I think there's people that are just not going to fly. Okay, so that's going to limit where they go. But, okay, let's say they're going to take a family vacation in the car. They're going to get in the car or truck and go somewhere to do it. But what about hotel rooms? And I said earlier in the week, they're probably cleaner than they've ever been because of this going on.
I would think they would be.
There's probably more protocols. They're cleaner than it. But it's public perception of staying somewhere that's not your house. And I wonder how that affects hotels, whether it be in Fouchon or it be somebody going to, to go see grandma or something out in Texas or wherever.
I wonder they have some high guidelines. I bet they, how blankets, they don't normally wash blankets every time. I bet they wash blankets now every time somebody stays there.
Because I just wondered about that. Yeah. Whether it be fishing a tournament, going somewhere. A lot of times people during the rodeo. People go down and get places in Venice or wherever to go fish or Fouchon. I wonder how it affects those people. So did she say whether they were booked or not? Did she say they were busy, they weren't busy?
Now, two weekends ago when it was so busy here, she said it was swamped down there.
So people are still booking the places down there?
Yeah, to go fishing.
Yeah.
Just no tournaments. But she said it was so busy, and I explained to her that's what happened to us here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just more people than I've ever seen. She said it was the same way. They had no places to park down there with trailers. People trying to park their boats and trailers said they just ran out of room. There was no more spaces for them to park.
Speaking of parking your trailers, and you're probably not having – if you're listening to us this morning, you're not having to deal with it because you're late. you're heading down to Dolphin Island. I can't speak as much for Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, but if you're like Mike and I and Dolphin Island folks, you're late.
Yeah.
Real late getting down there to get a parking spot. But it's going to be – we talked about it, I guess, last week or the week before – do take advantage of, if you can, and it makes sense for you, some of the other launches other than Billy Goat Hole or Little Billy Goat Hole. There are other places. You can go to the Bayou and launch, and you talked about how busy that was, too.
Yep.
But there are people starting to get to a point where, they'd rather run a little longer in the boat than have to deal with it.
It's something down at Dolphin Island.
You said it was weekend before last. It started Amberjack season.
Yeah, that was opening weekend of Amberjack season. It opened on a Friday, and I went down on a Saturday.
And it was?
They were parking 1.2 miles from the launch ramp. Now, think about that. Having to go park your trailer and your truck 1.2 miles down the road and walking back.
But there's honestly, if people, because Billy Goat Hole is the best, I would argue, maybe there's somewhere else that's different. But okay, let's say it's one of the top five most convenient launches on the Gulf of Mexico, on the northern Gulf of Mexico.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it puts you where you can launch somewhere that you are right there at the footstep of inshore fishing, bay fishing, all you want, and you're just there to start going offshore. I mean, you talk about, both you a lot more than me over the years, but both fished out of Venice. Even though, holy cow, you come out of South Pass, come out of Tire, you get to the deep water so fast, but you still have to, it's forever and a day to get there.
Oh, yeah.
Down the river.
Down the river. Yeah.
right?
40 miles.
You get a lot.
30 miles,
right.
Whatever it is, to get out to
and there's,
you know, then you can leave Venice and go out Red Pass, and you're in West Delta,
right?
Which is out in the Gulf.
But it's still not as close as leaving out of Billy Goat Hole.
No, it's not. No.
You know, and then you look at, people say, well, the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Sure, that puts you, if you take those launches there along Mississippi Gulf Coast, it puts you close, you know, to some inshore fishing. But you got to hike across Mississippi Sound and past the Barrier Islands before you...
That's right. You know, if you go to Pascagoula and launch, then you probably got, 12 miles, 15 miles, whatever it is, to get out past the islands to get into the Gulf.
So that's what I'm getting to is that's why we love Billy Goat Hole to death.
Yes.
And people say, hey, I got to fix something. Yo, it's an island. There's only so much real estate. I mean, I don't know how we're going to fix that. You know, people have already talked about this week, we need another launch on the island. Listen, the folks with the state would love to do that. They can get the places to put the back end ramps. There's just nowhere to park there. Like the Aloe Bay idea and all that. Great. You can get the ramps there at Aloe Bay on Dolphin Island. Where do you park?
Yeah.
Where do you park the people? So that's a tough thing. So to think about this ahead of time, if you can, if it works with your schedule, it may be worth launching a little farther up than coming the whole way down to, because it's just going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
But it's going to be bad everywhere. If you launch at Vile River or Dog River or wherever.
I tell you where I'm launching.
It's not going to be good.
Even though this is pre-recorded because Mike and I are fishing today. Next time I go where I'm going to launch, I'm going to launch up at Olin and McIntosh. And then they're going to be good to go.
You may be okay, but the water's coming down. There's going to be a lot of people fishing up there too, Sean.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Rivers are coming down.
Yeah, they are. And that's another thing. You get distracted and go that way and want to go freshwater fishing. But, yeah, so that's just a little discussion of that. When we come back, I want to talk some more snapper fishing and a little bit of the techniques that I've watched you use over the years. And you know what? I got two people this week talk to me about rigging. And you and I talked to Bobby Ambrosicato off air about rigging, and I'm still there. People say, what size circle hooks?
Running,
and I said, I don't know. I know them when I see them.
That's right.
You explained a little bit about that. But let's talk about rigging circle hooks. Let's talk about, what you're using for leader. Are you, fluorocarbon, how you're doing your rigs and all that when we get back. So we'll talk more about that here at FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we'd love for you to drop your pictures on the Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Got a good fishing picture from over the weekend or picture at all out there on the water. Send it to us. We'd love to see it. All right. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And Mike was fired up because talking some snapper. I went just for a second here to give you this score, if anybody cares, because I think there actually are more people than ever that are giving it a shot going out west, DIY kind of stuff.
Right.
And this is the time of year that we're finding out if we're drawn or not drawn. And I got results back in the last couple of weeks from New Mexico and Utah.
And you ain't going.
Actually, let me give you all a piece of information here. I think it might apply to one person in the audience, maybe 10 people. I don't know. But it's cool. It's what I may do this year. I was going to do it last year. Problem is the season falls. Like my children's birthdays are like 2 days separated.
Yeah.
They clustered up here. And it hit at the same time. But... yeah, so Utah, and okay, the interesting thing, so I mentioned New Mexico and Utah. First of all, New Mexico is a straight lottery system, so there's no building of points. Yeah. So I was mostly
get it or you don't get
that's
it.
That's right, and I'm mostly loaded up on units for archery elk. That's why I do bow hunt elk during the rut in September there, and I think I think you get five choices, and maybe I put a mule deer hunter two in there as well. But yeah, so... no draw, doesn't matter. Next year, everybody's back to zero.
Right
on this. Right. For example, comparing that to another state, Colorado, that I hunted a couple years ago, and hopefully I'll be hunting again this year, you're building points. But the question is, how many points do you want to build before you burn them? With Colorado, I'm burning as soon as I get – I took a year off, just family and finances, so I go every other year. And so I'll never build again, at least on the mule deer side, more than a point or two, and then I'm going to burn them. Because they have a thing, and we don't have time to get into it, but point creep. So many people don't they don't want to hunt all the time or something. They only want this one kind of hunt, the super right. perfect hunt in these states, and they just let points build, and it makes it where there's some units that are these, you know,
the best for killing,
honestly,
for killing
or in opinion, right?
Yeah,
it's just because
right.
sometimes these people are working off of information that's 10 years old, and yes, that unit used to be the best thing ever, and you could kill a 200-inch mule deer there doing nothing. And in the meantime, while they've been waiting to build up the points to get drawn, that unit is not as good anymore, and they're somewhere else. But I'm of the opinion that if I can hunt the same place a couple times,
you get familiar with it?
I have a better chance, I think, number one. Yes, if I can go hunt the same unit, let's say five times in Colorado, and yeah. I'm putting in for the same units I went 2 years ago to, and if I can go out there, I think I have a better chance of killing a bigger mule deer buck, knowing the land and knowing the spots versus a place that's a better unit for trophy quality, but I've never been there before.
No, I agree with that.
Now, if I lived in Colorado, different story. If I could scout all summer and all that stuff, but I'm not that guy. So, So Colorado still, I hadn't heard about them, but New Mexico, so didn't get that. Utah is a place I put in, but you build points. It's hard to get some of these elk hunts, but you build points, and eventually I'll have the minimum amount of points to be able to get drawn on some of these. And I put in for everything out there. Just with the chance. Now, we've talked about it before. Sheep is like the hardest thing in North America to draw. Yeah. The experts will tell you, you're wasting your money. You might as well buy into one of those raffles for a sheep tag somewhere, a governor's tag, or just save your money and go doll sheep hunting in Alaska. But it's once you buy the license and all the stuff you have to do to get in Utah's draw, it's worth me putting in $10 to, you know, just for the 0.03% chance of getting a desert sheep tag or big tort. So I put in for a bunch of stuff and the bison hunts out there. So, but didn't get drawn for those. But I was going to say on Utah, there's an interesting thing, and it really makes no sense to me from a wildlife management perspective. But I think it's a little bit wildlife management and a little bit people management they did out there, because they got so tight in Utah. This is even for the residents on hunting. They made these super trophy elk units, but it means, like, they don't draw a lot of people. It's hard to go hunt them.
Sure.
If you get drawn, it's amazing trophy potential. So what do? Because people still want to go hunting out there. They got a spike bull tag that even as a non-resident, I can get.
That don't make sense.
I think I can buy it over the counter.
Yeah.
So, and one side can be branched, I think. Maybe one side can have one branch, but the other side can't. So it's a spike tag.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to me because it's contrary, you know, where I'm trying to go in Utah to these units that have super trophy potential. I also look at this and go, okay, it's bow hunting. It's during the rut.
Yeah.
People I know say, you know what? You can do everything but shoot the big bulls. So if you want some experience of where they are, how to find them, how to interact with them, you go out there. They said, you still shoot that spike. Yeah. You want to, and they said, you know, you get pretty good chances at doing that. And they're still rutting to and running around. But so I think I might do it this year and just let other people know. If you'll look at Utah and look at the information for the state of Utah, if you want the experience, and Michael, you know, bust chops on me, I'm somebody that likes the experience and learning the grind of it all that.
Yeah.
Everything's the same except you can't shoot the big bulls. And these spike units are in the same unit that they're giant bulls in.
Yeah.
So you get to see them, but you can't shoot them. Your tag is only for a spike. So that's one little thing. If you're somebody said, man, I really want to go out west and, you know, I don't know what opportunities, if that's something that fits your description, not for everybody, but look at those spike bull tags in Utah.
A lot of people don't think about Utah either.
No, it's because it's a sleeper.
They kill some monster mule deer. Big. They kill some monster elk. And it is beautiful out there. Liberty Safes.
That's where Liberty, yeah.
Yeah, and Browning Safes out there and all that is out there. So, I mean, we've been out there, you know, quite a few times,
right?
And every time we go riding in the mountains and all that, and
it's
all
gorgeous.
The parks and stuff. And it's just beautiful out there. I'm telling you, just absolutely beautiful.
I would say this, just from no expert, but just from, you know, working on this for probably 5 or 6 years and hunting a couple, you know, years ago out in Colorado, that by research, I know there will be individual places that in Utah that have more game than Colorado. But what I've seen is, if you're hunting mule deer, the higher density of mule deer is Colorado. It just is. Yeah, yeah. They just got more of them. But because Utah really is tight on their tags, the even though Colorado, if you look, you want to look at Boone and Crockett mule deer.
Yeah,
Colorado like leads so much. It's not Montana. It's not Wyoming. It's Colorado.
Yeah, yeah.
But Utah, because they're so tight on their tags, they've got units. People are killing some giant mule deer bucks. I mean,
Yep.
If you can get drawn, that's the problem. See, Colorado, at least there's a chance of getting drawn after a year, or actually you can get drawn some units in Colorado with no points. But you get two or three points, you can get yourself on a unit where you could probably, you know, hunt and learn and kill a good mule deer. But if you get drawn at all in Utah, some of those places right now, those units are fantastic. But yeah, that spike, I just thought I'd throw that in there because it's a thing that you can go do. While so much stuff out west, you're like, man, there's no over the counter there. There's no, you know, there's some places there are. How could you go elk hunting in Utah? Well, if you would agree to kill a, I think it's a spike bull, or you can kill a cow.
Yeah.
And you know, but the thing is, it's not like you go somewhere else. They put, you're in the same unit that's the big bull country, and it doesn't cost you any points. Right,
yeah.
so you can still be building points, and you could go every couple years, you know, hunting spike bull elk if you want to kill one, have some meat and all that, and just have the experience of doing that while you're learning a unit that maybe one day you get drawn for that has, you know, the 380-inch bulls walking around, you know, 400-inch.
We're just spoiled around here.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, anybody, you come on, invite a friend from Colorado to come down here and go hunting with you, or you know, anybody can come from anywhere, come hunt. No problem. Buy a year license, hunt all year, every weekend, whatever. You can't do that in these other states.
No, and it's funny to watch the reaction. So there's a couple guys we met. We actually met them in Colorado, but they're from Utah, and who eventually I'll end up going with when I'm hunting out there. And talking to them about getting them back to Alabama with us there. I'm like, hey, kill a deer a day? And then they said, then what? I said, you can kill a deer the next day if you'd like to.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said, you know, we were talking about does. And they said, well, how many can you kill? I said, how much ammo do you have? You know, and watching their faces, all that. It's a different kind of deal.
That's right. Totally different.
But it's just a little update there. And I think they're just look on social media. There are more and more people, I think, trying to do this DIY stuff. And let me tell you, you can do it. I did it. You can do it.
Yeah.
And it's, if you like that kind of stuff, it's a heck of an experience. Once it's in your blood, I think about it daily still. I can't wait to go again. All right, snapper fishing. That's where we are right now. Let's run through a couple things here on the terminal tackle. And I think everybody's got the rods they want to use. And hopefully you put a little bit of reel lube on those things before you went out. You made sure your drags, you know, thing I learned years ago, back your drags off.
3 years ago.
Because I know there's some smoked up reels out there right now. People had the drag locked down the whole way. It's now seized up. And those are things we probably should tell you in August to do to get your stuff stored properly. But on the terminal tackle end of it, you know, being so long in the tackle business and fishing for so many years in the Gulf, your opinion is you know, highly sought after, at least in my eyes for sure. On your boat, what are you running on your terminal end? What are you running for hooks? What are you running for leader?
Of course, we're using tuna circle hooks.
Right, so circle hooks.
And, of course, you're going to say, well, what size?
Yeah.
Well, I got to look at it with my eyes.
You and I both.
Because Eagle Claw's 12-aught is different than a Gamagatsu's 12-aught, and it's different than a Mustad 12-aught. They're all different. I mean, you just got to look at them. But then there's different wire size.
There you go. So that was the other part of it, because people ask me what size. I said, well, I know it when I see it, but there's a strength of that.
That's a strength, yeah. So you got to look at it and see. I mean, I without knowing that this is what I use all the time, this number, but I use different numbers. You know, it's not just this one size. It depends on what I'm fishing for. Am I fishing for amberjack? Am I fishing for snapper? You know,
and how big a snapper? How much pressure the snapper had?
There you go. I mean, how much pressure? You fishing a public place? Well, you have to go lighter line and do some finesse fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where if you're going on a private spot, it's like it don't matter what you put down there, they're going to hit it. You know,
right? And so, I do a lot more of the stuff where, and you did too, some years with the bay boat though. You know, we're fishing the same area. You and I fish the same areas that are close, and those areas get a lot of pressure, but there's some fish on them. People give up and say they drop. There's no fish on them, but then you use some of the techniques, and that's smaller hooks, but they're still. You mentioned the wire thing. I want people to pay attention to this because end up buying a hook that's going to get bent out if you're not careful.
That's exactly right. Depends on what size fish you're catching.
Right.
You know, how much pressure you're putting on them.
I'd rather have a smaller hook that I can hide in a bait or whatever, but still has the backbone, because you get in those smaller hooks, and sometimes you get the same wire that like a bass hook's made out of.
That's right. Not quite, but close.
But you know what I'm talking about. Those
smaller diameter.
Y'all, those are going to get bent out.
That's right. If you're putting pressure on them.
Yeah.
If you're having to put a lot of pressure on them to get them out of the wreck or reef or
so that's not a size. That's not a size in how big the hook is, like around. It's the thickness
diameter of the wire. The hook, the wire. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So there's a lot of I have to look at it to see what I want. And then how to rig.
Yes.
Okay. There's a couple different ways to rig. Okay, you could, most people, I would say that they're using like a 3 foot, 4 foot leader, mm-hmm. and then they're putting a swivel, a hook on one end, a swivel on the other, and putting egg weight.
Okay, so, that's called a sow rig. Yeah, the egg weight's going to go up on your main line, and then that main line ties into one end of the swivel that has on the other the leader and the hook.
The 4 foot leader and a hook on the end.
Right.
Okay, then there's another way to do it, and this way that I've been doing it. And I learned this from Mark Candy, fishing with Mark a bunch. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty good way to snap a fish using a three-way swivel. Okay, so your leader goes off one of the swivels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you make a little, about a foot, little drop. Then you put an egg weight on it.
So he's talking about coming off the bottom of that swivel with the drop, meaning some line there. Leader or something strong.
Just think about three swivels, okay?
Right. Okay. But your drop is monofilament or it's fluorocarbon that's used to attach a weight to.
Yeah, okay. Let's just say your line's coming down
mm-hmm.
and your line is tied from your reel, is tied to the top of the swivel.
Okay, that connects to the rod. There you are.
Then there's another swivel coming out.
The 90-degree or
90-degree coming out. That's where your leader is mm-hmm. going to come out. And then you have about a foot leader coming down off the bottom swivel. Remember,
it's like a loop. It's a
yeah, and then you put an egg weight, bank sinker on it. Okay, and the good thing about that, too,
preach. This is the best part. What happens up on top of the boat with it?
Yeah, when you get ready to go to another spot, you just take the weight off because you don't have it tied. You just have it tied through a loop.
I love
it. So it's easy.
It's one of my favorite parts of that rig.
Yeah, so it's easy to take that off, and you don't have weights flying around beating your boat up. So, that's the best way I like to do it.
Okay, so let's talk about how you when you rig that way, how do you keep it from being a tangled mess when it comes up? When you're dropping, how do you keep the leader that's coming off the one? Because we go from the line to the three-way, then off that next one, that sideways one, that horizontal one, there's the leader with the hook that goes to the bait.
Right.
And then the weight is at the bottom. Now we're dropping. Doesn't that leader want to come up and wrap around the main
sometimes
line?
Sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it does. The easier you let it down, the less likely you have of having it wrap around your line. But sometimes you got that fish. If you got a lot of bait on there
mm-hmm.
and he sees something coming after him, he's going to go wrap around your line sometimes. So you have that sometimes, but not all the time. I mean, it don't happen a lot, but you do have that.
What about knocker rigs? I run those sometimes. In other words, you don't have that swivel. You have that weight. Here comes that. And I wouldn't do it with a big egg weight, but I do it some of my drift lines and all that. Here comes the weight down. It's just weight. Sometimes I'll put a bead in there or something to keep it from really knocking on the top of the knot and the hook, so it's just a weight coming down.
Just a weight coming down all the way to the hook.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's another way of doing it if you like to do that. But I like the leader away from the weight. I mean, I think a bigger fish will hit it better with a leader and a fluorocarbon if you can use that.
Yeah, use fluorocarbon. Of course, trying to find fluorocarbon right now at the beginning of snapper season.
Yeah.
All right, coming right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We're ready to wrap it up on a Saturday. Of course, we're already been hours out in the Gulf fishing. We pre-recorded this because it's the opening Saturday of snapper season. Remember, too, you got tomorrow and Monday. So now going forward, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Mondays of season versus where before it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So 4 days a week.
Yeah, if you're going snapper fishing today, be sure and put your bumpers on the outside of your boat. So when you're going out and you're hitting one boat and swing over to the other side and you hit another boat on the way out the pass, just make sure you're careful and don't ding your boat up by hitting other boats. Put your bumpers on.
I'll say that if we talk about this in trout fishing, anything, just common courtesy goes a long way, just in life, in traffic and dealing with other human beings. Don't forget that when you're on the water. And sometimes think about, don't just immediately get angry. Think about, hey, is there a way that we can effectively both fish this spot? I've talked about it before. My anchor doesn't come out when I snapper fish. Hadn't for decades. I don't anchor anywhere, And even before I was running Navigator, thank goodness I run the iPilot now, which is a neat thing. But beforehand, too, we just drifted. You know, we drift, drop, make a loop, drift, come drop, back. Make a loop. That's so right. Just think about that out there.
The iPilots have really made a big difference. Man, it's something. That is the ticket. Yeah,
it's something.
And the Rodan, the new Rodans. Yeah. They're putting them on, a friend of mine just put it on 34 Fountain. He said it works like a champ. Think
how about that?
That.
Would you ever thought 34 Fountain had a trolling motor on it?
They put them on 42-foot Freemans, too.
Wow. All right. We'll recap Snapper season, well, the first weekend when we come back next week. Prep Sports Report on the way next. See y'all then.